welcome all, welcome all. We're doing we're fighting monsters, okay, Oreo?
Right.
Monsters, throw away that voodoo magic.
Good opening.
So the original magic man, as made famous by Hart, Robert Porter.
Evening, everyone.
Evening. And Donatelli.
Hello, guys.
Hello. Hello. And we got none other than Oreo Brewer.
Yeah, I'm there.
YouTuber. Talking about a different Cinnabite universe. We're talking about the best moments in the everlasting Candyman saga.
And there's no fucking candy.
There yep. is candy.
But not Twizzlers.
Oh, I see what you're doing here. Okay, Jesus. So it's not candy to you if it doesn't have it. I get it.
Mm-hmm.
Or yeah, just so you know, you don't have to make this difficult. It can all be.
I'm not trying to.
It's just like the white panel band. Picking it apart. Oh, God.
There was no candy in this film at all. That's no stars. Negative stars.
No edible candy.
No, that's true.
That we know of. So what was we're going to circle around how we got into this loosely adapted Clive Barker adaptation. Shout out to the Barker cast. Those guys are amazing. They're doing some heavy lifting on this bizarre gothic-y, very slasher kind of adaptations of Barker's work and how hard it is to adapt and make all the themes make sense.
Word. His work is so dark and just so... Not even the gore aspect, it's just the mature, dark themes that are so hard to get approved.
Yeah, kind of like some slightly more word of mouth, kind of like Todd McFarlane is kind of liked for his material, but not really liked as a person. But I do kind of feel like this was kind of the
opposite.
Well, that or just kind of a introduction to kind of the gothic-y kind of, you know, description of various demons, purgatory, as well as showing some social commentary, you know, years before, you know, Get Out and years after George Romero kind of stuff, just that kind of just perfect, just, well, I don't know if it's always perfect, but just a very dynamic kind of take on the wrongs of the world while also echoing just other truths in society that are just hard to talk about, like you say.
Yeah. I reviewed his art book recently and that was, oh man.
Yeah, it definitely will get under your skin, and that is not a pun.
But the one thing that's smart about Clive is that his work isn't just focused on one damn thing. It's multiple things, and I like that.
Yeah, there's a little something for everybody.
Yeah.
And Rob, how about yourself? How did you get into this material?
You asked me to watch it. I'm just kidding. No. When I first seen Candyman, actually, it was way, way back in the day. And, you know, I watched them before we came on to do this. I actually really, really enjoy them. And a lot more now than I used to. Because, like, you know, there's two things about this movie that I think is really interesting. One is you have this tone, first of all, of a Freddy Krueger demon, as you guys were saying, as kind of word of mouth type story, where a guy kind of survives on the folklore of, you know, of fear that everyone has. But underneath, too, I think you have a really more interesting perspective. And you know, Rob's bringing this up because I'm not saying that that is exactly what this whole movie is about, but it is a huge aspect of it, which is racial injustice of what Candyman represents.
Right.
You know, he's almost this
the man doesn't look out for anybody, and it
right,
takes
but
just civilians and very powerful heroines to really just kind of drive home the everyday themes and
right. You know, I think there's a lot, like, he almost becomes as a character for just the way things are. That's almost like what Candyman represents. And even like the story itself, and I really liked, and I, you know, I've seen the sequels, but I saw the first one and then I seen the new Jordan Peele one, And I have to say, I was really, really impressed with how those two stories got connected, because it was impressive. But there's definitely, you know, if you don't like it just for that racial undertones of injustice in, you know, you could say Chicago too, of what Candyman's supposed to represent, that like neglected society, you could also enjoy it as a demonic type, you know, Freddy Krueger-esque kind of story.
It is amazing how we have to kind of illustrate to people, hey, there's all kinds of elements that appeal.
There's
to
two of them.
Literally, it's a dual thriller. And how about yourself, Donna, other than me saying, hey, you want to join in the fun?
Oh, she cut out again.
Can you hear us? Okay, shit.
Donna!
Okay, chill.
Be my victim, Donna.
Okay, come on.
Okay. Get in my van, I have.
She said Candyman too many times.
Right, well, no, I actually watched them because you made me. Because
I'm the worst person ever. Okay, we're cutting in and out, guys. Technical difficulties.
Welcome to our podcast. It is fucked up for a little bit.
Okay, shit. Hello. Okay.
Yes. Can you hear me?
Yeah.
Yes, I think so.
All right. Can you hear me?
Yep.
Yes.
Hurry up and say what you got to say.
Okay, come on.
Okay, hold on. I switched it to my phone, so maybe hopefully I'll be good then.
Yeah, it should be. It's very common, unfortunately, on Zoom. It's come a long way, hopefully. But it still has some flaws.
All right. Let's try this.
Yes.
So, I actually
All right.
watched because
Let's try this.
You asked me
okay,
to.
Okay, so I actually watched the movie because...
But I don't know, like when scary. I first watched them, I just felt like it was kind of repeating itself over and over and over
you
again.
Asked me to, and I've never seen any of them.
But
just a minute,
Cam, okay. You should mute one of them, Cam.
Guys,
mute one of them, Cam. Yeah,
no, I have. Okay, and it seems to be echoing, so
yeah.
Double Donna.
Let's no, guys, just a minute. Please.
I exited out of my computer, but I guess it didn't shut down all the way.
No,
there you go.
Okay,
there we go.
Let's try now. Does it sound good?
Yeah, I can hear you guys.
Perfect. Yeah, no, it's very common. Okay.
Scary.
Okay. Oh,
that was terrifying.
Aria, stop.
No, but like I watched it because you asked and all that, and I just felt like it was like a repeat over and over and over again. And then I started doing like the history of it and like looking at the background and why
the biracial relationship. Yeah,
exactly. And then like I really got into it, and I spent maybe 6 hours yesterday and like 4 hours today just like doing all the research I could on Candyman. It's amazing that the man that played Candyman, who I thought did in a freaking amazing job playing that
Todd,
part,
baby.
Yep.
But never got a reward for it.
Yeah.
Damn.
Yeah.
And horror still... films don't get awards.
Well, there's that, but I mean, but no, that is a good point. It does seem like it just, you know, unless it's something like a Sigourney Weaver appearance, they just seem to ignore a lot of horror and sci-fi and even comedy and action. But yeah, I'm with you. He's now even more tempted to do stage plays nowadays. I'm like, dude, you have so much more talent. We need to see more of you.
Yeah, but maybe he's thinking stage plays will get him more of the recognition that he deserves. Because I mean, dude, those were live bees in his mouth.
Actual
no
bees.
Thank you.
Method acting.
The bees. The bees.
Oh God, I'm so glad I did not go there. But yeah, it's so true. I would have guessed it.
Yeah.
Wow. So Candyman's connected to Wicker Man.
Yeah.
Well, actually, those bees are actually connected to my girl. Those bees are. The genetic ones that they used on the set of My Girl that stung and killed that little boy.
Oh, he can't see without his glasses.
I actually didn't know that. That is crazy.
Yep.
Oh, wow.
Then put in his contract for every bee sting he got was like an extra $1,000. Nice. And he was getting stung 23 times in his throat and in his mouth doing that one scene where the bees are in his mouth.
Damn.
Yeah.
I would have quit. I would have been like, if you guys can't figure this out, then I'll figure it out for you.
Dude, I'm allergic. I would have died.
Yeah.
But Cam, what you chose this subject here to bring on your show. What right. do you think about Candyman overall? What is your overall perspective of it? Very... I mean, why did you think this was a good subject to talk about?
He
wants
you,
candy.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Oreo is absolutely right. But no, seriously, I.
That's Oreo on the show, you know.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Right.
Freaking cookies, man. To answer it more simply, it's just much like every other franchise we've covered on here, we've always kind of just loved talking about their themes, you know, which of the sequels delivered, which ones kind of went downhill, missed the point. And then it's just when we were revisiting so many of them, I just figured, you know, it's just we can talk even hit more at home on why the themes still carry over to today, why they haven't dated the movie, why they've only made it even more empowering and rediscovered. And like you guys say, you know, it is cool to just kind of understand just the backstory behind it and how you just can't even watch any other version of it. It will totally ruin the movie. Like my introduction to it was watching it one lazy night on UPN, and you know, they cut out all the gore and they cut out all the exposition. So I was very bored. I'm like, well, I like Tony Todd from Star Trek and The Rock and a bunch of other movies. I kind of feel like he was wasted here, even though he's good. But yeah, I came around and I saw all the sequels, and you know, I understood why it was just too good of a property. It was just so hard to market and, like you guys say, just get through some of those other racial barriers, even with marketing people. It's just still, we're seeing it nowadays. We'll see producers talk out a line and say something messed up. And it's like, so you just think a movie won't make money because it stars a minority? Good God, what the fuck is wrong with you? You know, it's all kinds of stuff. And
like,
it's cool
have
to,
you seen famous films in the past that I made?
Right. Have you seen anything by Oliver Stone or Spike Lee? Or is, yeah.
Have you seen The Joy Luck Club, for fuck's sake?
Oh yeah, the Joy Luck Club is great. Yeah, it's just, Crazy Rich Asians, for fuck's sake, made a shit ton of money, and it wasn't about its story being impressive. It was about it just discussing, just making a movie with an all Asian cast, much like Black Panther. So yeah, no, I'm with you guys. It's very intriguing how something like this can really echo dark truths in this world and open up the conversation while showing real life terror and make it even more spooky, even regardless of how graphic you get.
Well, I like the fact that they even put like the little shadow movies or whatever. Like if you looked into those were the actual injustices that's happened. Like the newest one, I think, was 1998, where a black man knew this couple of white guys and gave him a ride home, and they ended up beating him and dragging him behind the vehicle.
Absolutely. Like, so, I remember that. I think they dramatized that as a Showtime docudrama one time, but yeah, there's still just so many just unacceptable just incidents that happen in this world, and each time we're just like, does no one answer for it?
It's interesting too that the character Helen, realistically too, and it's, I was kind of noticing this when I watched it, is she's a white woman that's interested in this obsession about this black man. And, you know, this comes off as taboo in a lot of ways, and, you know, and still in a way a wink in society today. And what's interesting about this, the first one especially, is she goes through the movie with a lot of people saying like, hey, stop investigating this, stop talking about this, because you're going to get in trouble. And then what happens is she actually becomes part of him in a way, and she starts getting the same racial injustice as he got. So they start ignoring her. They stop listening to her. Like, remember in the moment when she gets beat by the guy who took the name Candyman, and that cop was like, you know, it's okay, we're going to figure this out. And she was like, she even says in the film, like, you know, there's murders in this complex all the time and they don't do anything about it. But the minute a white woman calls, they, you know, they storm this place and block it out.
Yeah.
And he's all sitting there talking to her and saying like, you know, it's okay, you did a good job. But when she gets murders, you know, cuts the Rottweiler's heads off, and then, you know, the baby is gone. That detective is just like, tell us who did it. You know, you are scum. Like, basically, it's almost exactly as
like a reverse lynch. It's a reverse. Kinda.
Yeah. Yes, it really is.
But that's so true. Yeah. It's just like so many authority. It wouldn't make sense to have an authority figure because they don't, you know, it's kind of echoing how they not only don't do their job, but they don't. They think it's all for nothing, so they're not going to spend any time on it unless they got an explicit, like, you know, need to know, hey, there's a manhunt happening in the city, we got to bring in a few people each year, you know,
right.
But they don't want to fix the problem, like you said.
Right. Like I said, he's almost a representation of the way things are, and especially the 2021 one with Jordan Peele. It is exactly at face value what Candyman is about. I'm sorry to jump from the sequels here, but you had the baby from the first one that is now basically the reincarnation of fucking Candyman. Sorry to cuss on there. Sorry too about that, late. Everybody.
It's all good.
It's all fucking good, motherfucker. Let's fucking do it.
But no, that's true.
You had the baby that was taken originally, and then he becomes Candyman. And then that guy is actually telling the story about, like, everything that happened, you know, all the racism. And he's even like, you know, the white people, they like us just for what we can do. He's like, and that's what mm-hmm. And he's like, you're going to become the new Candyman. You're going to sit there and, you know, deal with all the shit that he does, all the fucking horrific things he does, you know, as an excuse to society like that. And it's what's really interesting. And I really liked the Jordan Peele one because it really put it on face value. The first one is a lot of wink and nods about things. Mm-hmm. The Jordan Peele one is straight up about racial injustice. I mean, there's a part too where they put the girl in the car and they're like, well, you know, maybe she was part of it, you know. Maybe yeah. She was, and then, you know, she just says, well, I know how to, you know, get out of it. And she says, Candyman, and basically
cop angle was a good one.
Yeah. And remember even too, when they bust in and the guy's on the floor and they shoot him, yeah. And they don't ever do anything to her. And it's just like, this is exactly the undertones that make this film really interesting on two levels.
Oh, totally. And it was just already heartbreaking when you just, like you say, you would encounter people who would talk about this movie, but we still see it in even certain Facebook and Twitter groups where people want to talk about something, but they don't want to actually be constructive and discuss it. They kind of want
right.
just vague remarks. Oh, that's scary. Oh, it's
put sad. The blame on something. Candyman.
The blame. Yeah.
The blame is Candyman.
But that's true too. Yeah. They don't want to even go beyond how there's more than one villain in this mess. And Candyman is kind of much like Pinhead or even the Wishmaster, so to speak. He's kind of just the referee. He's not the main instigator.
Right. And Donna, we were talking about this off air. You had some interesting stuff about the backstory and everything.
Yeah. So the very first movie where they were shooting it, those are actually part of the projects.
Yeah.
In Chicago.
And then they move it to New Orleans in the sequel is like they yeah. wanted that authenticity. I don't know where the hell part three is set. Mexico City.
They actually told like the actors and stuff that they could not shoot the movie without police protection and street clothes because they were so scared because that place has gotten such a bad rap that they were afraid, you know, that they would be shot and killed because a couple years before that, the gangs were actually standing on top of the freaking buildings and shooting at other rival gang members and the police where they just didn't come in anymore.
Yeah.
But the cool thing was, like, everyone gathered together, never once gave the producers or the actors or anything such a hard time that this place was believed to have. But instead, they joined together, and a lot of them were actually some of the doubles in the movie, you know, or the extras.
Right. And it's a good way to get you know, some other work credits on your resume, regardless of your background checks. And yeah, like you say, they're opening up and reminding everyone, hey, what you think this is about, you know, have you actually been here? Or are you just going on, you know, rumors, word of mouth?
Like my girlfriend's friends ended up being extras on Hercules and Xena back then.
Oh, I am jealous, but
that is jelly. I'm jelly too.
That's jelly.
But I take it you're using that as a contrast in how they actually found out more about how everything kind of works and everything. It's not just, hey, you know, come see the famous sites, you know, in this country, in this city, you know.
Definitely.
Yeah, but the sad part is, out of all those, that project, because they built onto it later, and they were like multi-condos.
Yeah, they tore them down.
And, yeah, there's only the original two-leveled ones that are still left. And what you can see that those are seen in the last movie when he goes back and he's like looking into the Candyman. Those are actually what is left of those projects.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. So.
Time to rewatch.
But, but not only that, you had too, like, you know, Donna, I'm sorry to steal this from you, Donna, but you brought this up earlier when we were coming on here. Yeah, sorry, not sorry. But Donna was bringing this up too about,
I'm just kidding.
She was bringing it up too about how, you know, when I was bringing up the fact that she is chosen by him, she is obsessed with this, like, you know, this black man. But then the backstory is too, is that this guy was a painter that painted like this virginity, you know, this virgin daughter that was this farmer's, and they fell in love, had a kid, and he burned him, put bees on him, all that, all
also
that horrible jazz.
To quote that line from Man on Fire, Greasy, he's painting his masterpiece.
Right.
But yeah, no, that is true. He leaves you on this puzzle, and I do like people complain about when they give horror villains a backstory. I'm actually with Candyman. I like,
right,
we realize in another lifetime he was a slave, he was abused, and he basically got revenge on all the slave traders and everything. And it's interesting to know how it's literally the same thing, but it's now in the form of, you know, attorneys with an agenda, you know, other gang members who have turf wars, and other cops who don't want to do anything about it. And he's anywhere. He basically, much like Pinhead, he seeks out scum, and he basically just makes them, he doesn't even make them beg. He's just kind of just, it's so weird.
Dares him to say his name, which was an interesting thing in the new one, because, you know, and again, I'm not trying to get so heavy political, but we talked about, you know, the society now with like Black Lives Matter, when people were talking, remember when George Floyd was going around, people were like, say his name. They were like, you know, say his name. This is kind of like that. And I was like, when I saw that, I was like, that's interesting. I was like, because this is also a story about a guy where he's just like, I'm a rumor. I dare you to say my name. You know, say his name.
Make the name matter.
Make the name matter.
Kind of like how people will say, I'm sorry, but it doesn't mean anything anymore.
Right.
You can repeat it five more times. It's
exactly.
Exactly. Teamwork makes the dream work. That makes nope.
Oh, yeah, really sticks and stones may break my bones. Yeah,
all those cliche metaphors.
Yeah, right. Yep. Or like you say, so you guys have all summed up all this negating by the powers that be, that ultimately just they don't make any difference. They don't put any meaning in this world. And I do like how, like you say, she's a reporter and it's a taboo subject, but she's not like any reporter. She's basically doing the editorial columns, and then she gets personal. Her pal gets ambushed, I think, murdered later, I think. And
by her, supposedly.
Yeah, by her, supposedly.
Yeah.
We all know it was Candyman. He just pinned it on her.
But that's the whole point, is like, now that's the switch, is now she is being blamed, just like anybody, any other kind of minority, you know. They're like, you did it, we're not listening to this other stuff, you did it.
Exactly. Right,
that's like identity.
We feel sorry for her, but at the same time we also, we realize this is the only way she would have been able to believe in any of the supernatural magic.
And she's in the second one, correct, guys? I mean, you got to help me out here, because I know the second one, it leads away a little bit from all this to being more of a typical, like, slasher kind of horror, correct?
I don't remember too that much.
We'll return after these messages.
Hello and welcome to Culture Shocked, the pop culture podcast brought to you by four aging millennials and our outdated opinions. Join us every Tuesday as we discuss movies, TV, games, and even music, new and old.
Dude, what do you think you're doing?
Are you seriously trying to record a promo without us right now?
Well, yeah.
Dude, you can't just do the promo by yourself. Who's gonna listen to that?
Yeah, and you probably haven't even told them that we're a pop culture podcast where we always agree on everything. For instance, the Sam Raimi trilogy, easily being the best of the Spider-Man movies.
No. But I think we can all agree that Jaws is a classical masterpiece.
Nope, don't like that. But we do all agree that the sequel trilogy of Star Wars is the best in the Skywalker saga, right, guys?
That comment is so ridiculous. I don't even know where to
Anyways, that'll do it from all of us here at Culture Shock. Thanks for listening.
Do you ever find yourself thinking about who would win in a fight between Goku and Superman? Hi, I'm James Gavsey, and on the Who Would Win show, me and my co-host Ray ignore anything important happening in the outside world and debate fictional battles between characters from comics, movies, and video games.
We got a new show every week, and almost always am I the winner.
Yeah, not true, Ray.
In the past, we've discussed such matches as Captain America versus Darth Vader, Solid Snake versus the Iron Giant, classic matchups like RoboCop versus Terminator, and even the Muppets versus Sesame Street.
That one was crazy. So if you're a fan of geek culture and love a spirited debate, check out the Who Would Win show wherever you get your podcasts, or check us out at whowouldwinshow.com.
We let things pile up in the DVR. We add them to our queues. We wait for the DVDs and Blu-rays. We time shift. The Time Shifters Podcast. Sci-fi, horror, fantasy, superheroes, comedy, action, film, television, maybe some not-so-current events. Find us on iTunes or at timeshifterspodcast.com.
Cool thing about Blind Knowledge is we are in multiple countries. We are worldwide, all across the globe. We are in the US, we are in the UK, we are in Canada, Germany, India, Japan, we're in Australia, y'all. BlindKnowledge.com. Now back to the feature presentation.
Dragon Ball Z, One Piece, Naruto, all things that we love, all manga that were originally published in the legendary magazine Weekly Shonen Jump.
But not every series can run for 300 chapters and have a hit anime. This is David.
This is Jordan.
We're the hosts of Shonen Flop. Each episode we look at manga that ran in Jump that didn't quite make it.
We discuss what it did wrong, what it did right, how the series could have turned itself around, and ultimately, was it a flop or not?
Run all your favorite podcast apps, and you can find us at shonenflop.com.
Keep on flopping, floppers.
Part two was definitely a slasher. It's kind of... I like how, in this case, the female heroine is... You know, they're still investigating uncomfortable subject matter. They detail how callous some of these young kids and other gangbangers are, and like they're beating animals to death and everything. They don't show it for the animal lover in us, but they also reillustrate how, you know, she's got a abusive roommate and everything, and there's all other kinds of stuff. And once again, I like how they kind of show a police station slaughter, because it just kind of just shows how there can be any kind of violence in this area. And because it's so understaffed and everything, no one's ever going to answer to it or figure it out. It's all going to go in the cold case files and then get thrown out after 2 decades, you know?
That's a great point, too, about this. I mean, that, again, is Candyman, too. I mean, they talked about that.
People
how,
are
like,
defeatist
they don't,
with their attitude. They just say it doesn't
they don't
matter.
Care.
Like, it
They're
does
like, it
matter.
It happened over there. Who cares? Right. But it happened over there, you know?
Yeah.
I don't care.
You're acting weird, but...
Yeah, well, it's okay.
Yeah. Right. And I like how they even open up part two with all these barflies and everything. And all of them are just like, yeah, whatever you are, get out of here. And then our first victim, you know, he just meets the Candyman in the restroom. And you're just like, of course.
This is where
everyone dies. Right. If they haven't overdosed or drunk themselves to death, they're basically, they got some other vice coming their way.
Yeah.
But yeah, it's one of the few who it, I mean, Blade was pretty cool in my introduction to horror, just on blending in dark fantasy and horror with all these Lost Boys type villains, but it would show other...
Cool's an understatement to Blade.
Word.
Kind of. Kind of.
I mean, especially if you're not a comic book person.
I was just going to say, it's a comic movie before comic movies, man. I mean, it trailblazed a lot.
It trailblazed a lot, but I like how both it and Candyman make serious use of their city.
Yeah.
That is great. That's
nothing
good point.
Is safe. Nothing is sacred. Even when you see very limited partygoers and homeless, you get an idea. Oh,
The city in itself is a character. I mean, when even in the first movie and in the last one, they show a lot of Chicago, you know, inner city, like the spray paint, especially, you know, here's the sweets when she like walks into the stall and it's shit. It's shit on the wall. And they're like, here's the way to the sweets. I mean, the city itself is another character. Everywhere she goes, I mean, the more she, you know, dives into the story of him, the more it seems like the city gets darker from when she like steps into his mouth. Remember that, the big spray paint?
Oh, yes, that was cool.
It's like that's entering his world right there, is when she entered his world. And you know,
none of them mattered before then, but now they both are in each other's mind. They can't.
And the candy was right there with the razor blades, and she cut her hand on it. And you know, I want to bring something kind of up you were talking about too, Cam. You know, and I know I said this was like a Freddy Krueger-esque type character, but realistically, in the first movie alone, Candyman had more of a dynamic story than Freddy Krueger had in all the films that took up to explain it. Like, it's way more of a dynamic character.
Bob Shea kind of got spoiled. It's like he didn't expect Nightmare to be good, and then...
Right.
It's funny how producers are. It's kind of like when HBO had a surprise hit with The Sopranos, but they didn't like anything that had unethical characters and constant cursing. So it's just amazing how people just are chicken shits. They can't own their material. It's like, no, dude, you funded this. You saw something good in it. It was more than just a check in your pocket. Own it.
That's right.
Donna, do you have anything you want to mention as being this is a female character too? That is, you know, I would argue, is she a vulnerable female character in this film, or do you think she holds her own to all the dangers that present her? I mean, because she goes in the movie kind of like, you know, her friend's like, let's go, you don't belong here, and she's like, nah, come on, we'll keep going. I mean, what do you think about Casey that aspect?
I think she holds her own because any person in that particular, you know, situation, they may be like, you know what, I know this isn't safe, I'm just going to go ahead and turn around and not follow my dreams and not finish this thesis, and just, I'm going to turn a blind eye like everyone else does. But she doesn't. She hits it head on. She wants to challenge not just like herself, but the system, to prove there's something wrong and something needs to change. And she sacrifices herself to make that change, even at the very end where she sacrifices herself to save that baby.
Does she sacrifice herself, or does she give in to his proposal?
I think because she was constantly looking at the baby because she knew that she had to save him.
She even does say in the movie, I want one of my own.
That's true. Well, yeah. All these wants and needs.
But if she would have let that child burn, would there have been the new Candyman? Because that baby's the one in the new one.
Yeah, Anthony.
You know? So.
No,
did anyone else
that is
find
true,
it?
Donna, I like how you brought that up. That is because kind of like it is almost kind of like Linda Hamilton as Sarah Connor in the Terminator movies. Just that whole, she had to, the danger and peril that she has put in makes her reevaluate her life, which is more deep than most movies, which want to just often just wrap it up and get too cute for their own good. And it's just so cool to just see a movie that takes you on the strip. Sorry, go ahead.
Like the director even said he didn't want to make a movie to where the female screamed a lot, because that was already being done and cliched. He actually had her hypnotized during the set.
Really?
Yeah. Yes. When he, Candyman shows up in the first one, when he's in the parking garage or whatever, and she looks like she's hypnotized. She truly is hypnotized. She agreed to allow it because they wanted to take a different step on this movie, not have a female scream and, you know, type of damsel in distress or whatever.
He's got beans.
But no, that is a true point.
I think we should have more females tied to train tracks personally.
I'm not even finding that funny. That fuck that. No.
I was gonna say, Robert, be happy you live so far away.
Yeah, dude. I'm gonna have to check you out for that. But anyway, that is true, because that they want us to all answer to all these kind of things. They want the audience to put in perspective. And Bernard Rose has worked numerous other times with Virginia Madsen's ex, Danny Houston, as well as Tony Todd. He's kind of just one of those, much like you know, just some of those other 80s and 90s guys did a bunch of action and horror movies in the in those other eras. Stephen Hopkins, Anthony Hickox, he has had a dark sense of humor, but he knows what he's making each and every time and what he sets out to do. And I see other people trying to even just bash this movie because they don't find it personally scary. I'm like, well, it is, but not in the way that you generally acknowledge horror. And it's just
so, and I bet most of them complain about it because it's color based.
There is a bunch of that. And I'm going to disappoint us when we do our final rankings, but it's for different reasons altogether. You know, some of the, this is the right kind of slow pace because you know where it's going. You see a bit of this in Tales from the Hood and even Lovecraft Country.
I love that movie.
Tales from the Hood or Lovecraft? Yes. Tales from the Hood is amazing.
That shit's hilarious.
I recommend both because both of them bring up some other racial injustice in real life stories and bring it into their fantasy arcs. But I mean, Rob, you texted us back a few weekends ago and you're telling me about just awful toxic workplace stuff that you've encountered. And
oh yeah,
it seems like we're still, you know, with all these schools being underfunded and de-educating their students, it's like we're setting each other up for even more failure to where we always play the blame game. Oh, you're just not right. meant for this. It's like, I'm not meant for this because everyone else is being a dickhead to me. No, I'm not going to blame me and victimize myself. And it's amazing how we have to just kind of reintroduce ourselves. Hey, the world's not fair, but there are ways to actually report some of the injustices.
Right. The symbolism of pointing the finger and saying, you know, again, oh, Candyman did it. You know, Candyman did it.
The Candyman.
Or as we hear, the boogeyman, you know, that scapegoat boogeyman, you know, don't blame automation.
Blame the fictional character. Yeah.
Blame the immigrants, you know, blame something that's fictional.
Right. Or our over-dramatized version of a real person. But yeah, like you say, yeah, no one wants to solve it. They just want to blame it. I had a aunt who was very, long story short, pretty cynical, and long story short, that I think that hostility she had finally got to her. She passed away not too long ago, but she had a bad habit of doing the blame game. Like, you wanted this to happen to me, and
right,
and her husband, my uncle, also kind of took on that, and I just couldn't stand to be around him half the time because I was like, guys, this Domino's pizza guy did not wrong you. Just but it is amazing how that is still kind of a thing. Sometimes you even see victims doing the finger pointing game, and it almost becomes like a real life SVU or Cruel Minds. And you're like, are you seriously doing this right now? This is going against everything you stand for. And
I've watched the show. I know how this works. You're doing it wrong. This is what's in the script.
But no, that is true. How? Why does it take certain things to happened before it finally matters?
I don't know.
You still see hack journalists who will call a peaceful protest a riot. I'm like,
no,
okay, maybe it's time to go back and look at that damn dictionary, because you know it's the Princess Bride. Keep using that word. I don't think you know what it means, you know.
Well, you talk about the blame game, and the last thing I want to say, especially on that toxic work environment, and you know, me and Cam, our audience who have no, we do talk stuff off.
We're
off,
openly gay, but yeah, no, seriously,
we do talk stuff offline. But one of the things I heard them talk about recently was talking about the other side, and the thing that they were talking about, the other side, basically being the other side of the aisle, is the very thing like I hear about their side of the aisle, and I'm sitting to myself going, "Don't you think this is a problem?" Like, if we're both sitting here saying the same thing about each other, and I'm like, that's not true. I don't feel like that. And you don't feel like that on your side, but you're sitting there saying we feel like that about each other.
Yeah.
It's really like, interesting of the blame game that goes around and how no one does want to sit down and actually solve a problem. They just want to point the fingers to the point of where it's almost confusing.
It's like delivery confusion sometimes too. And I'm talking before they watch anything, you know, garbage like on Fox News or even MSNBC, you know, CNN's gotten even worse by, hey, we got to talk about Trump and empower him more because ratings is like, no, you should. I'm not saying you should underreport, but you should not glamorize this guy. Just right. You're desperate for ratings. But yeah,
right.
We get all this distorted hatred, and then it kind of evolves into the inevitable, okay, now we're going to slug each other, you know? And I've seen so many people who have talked about, you know, I used to work at the airport and that was a toxic one. I would get in trouble for, I kid you not, I did my job.
Like, okay.
I was reporting taxis that were, you know, not meeting the guidelines and traffic laws and everything.
Yeah.
Oh, and I wasn't doing it to be a dick. I was just like, okay, well, eventually there's going to be a crack in this entire windshield and you're going to have to get it replaced. So go ahead and, you know, replace it this weekend. And I got told, hey, you know, do enough, but not much. It's like, so that is a terrible morale in any workplace to just say, just, you know, it's one thing if changes take a while and you just suck it up. But when it gets down to you're doing everything we're asking you to do and we need you to just pause, it's like, well, then why are we here?
And we got to think about our shareholders first. Okay. What about who thinks about them?
Oh, at that same job, I had a boss who did the whole, like, I'm going to a meeting, which was his way of saying,
co-worker not coming back.
On a Friday, yeah, which is his way of saying, I'm leaving, don't fuck it up. I'm leaving early. And it's like, and I did almost always, especially when that one executive at that one part of the hospital, when he gets slaughtered by Candyman, I like how, much like the Hellraiser movies and even Terminator, I like how they instantly, they do a good job with the actor and, like you say, the dialogue at, you know, really giving the dummy, like, you actually feel like they're a legit stupid person as opposed to a plot device. And it's like, and by the time he believes, you know, it's too late, you know, he's already been impelled. But it's it is cool to see how they almost kind of do a little bit what they did with the Halloween movies before they got out of control, just the whole cyborg. I always liked that element in movies because it seemed like that was always the best way. That's how you knew the writers were very bright. You know, it's like, hey, psych wards, we always hear bad things about those, you know, in those are a broken system. Those are basically
that
where
is a broken
anyway.
System.
Yeah, it still is. That's where we throw away people who just say
a movie
stuff
trope is what Cam's getting at.
Yeah, but it's a good movie trope as opposed to one where, like you say, someone does something douchey and they try to glamorize them and like, nah, you're far gone. You can't redeem yourself. And then there's others like, okay, you're imperfect, but you're the right kind of guy who's willing to get his hands dirty and fight evil with evil. But then, yeah, I like how, to all your earlier points, again, there are no superheroes fighting them in here. You know, everybody is an average Joe who finally, by Act 3, gets that inertia, that extra bravery.
Yeah. I had sex. Now I can beat his ass. That's
if
my
you
favorite
to put it
trope,
that way,
I
it's more than
shit.
That.
If you were in Friday 13th, you'd be a superhero right there.
I don't know.
If you survived it.
Rob, Jason is the superhero. What are you talking about?
Anyway, I know. He's the abstinence superhero. For those of you in the audience
the
who don't know.
Coming of Christ. What are you talking about? No, I'm just kidding. Anyway. anyway, seriously. I can't believe I went there.
I knew you would.
How powerful
our father and Jason Voorhees, hallowed be thy name.
Oh, Jesus. No pun.
It's Jason, not Jesus.
That Jesus should be Jason. The new movie. The confusion between the two nowadays. He's like, it's Jason, not
there
Jesus.
You go.
And then he wins the presidency.
They both got impelled, to be fair. So, yeah. No. How do you rank? We should actually call Candyman by his actual name. let me look
how
it
many
up.
How many times is that bitch's name?
Right. I'm not saying it 5 times. Stop it.
Listen, I tried to explain to my husband yesterday, like, the stuff I was learning about Candyman.
That's
we
two.
Thorn moving in. And every time I said Candyman, our life was flicker. And my husband looks
really?
At me and says, if you say Candyman one more time, I'm done with this show.
Oh, my God. So, yeah. Don't say his name. Oh my God.
So I said Candyman again.
God damn it. We're dying tonight.
We're done for. We are fucking done for. I know, right? Oreo's just gonna just go blank.
We are not done for because one, I can't see my reflection at all. My phone's face down on the bed, so I can't even see my reflection.
Have you by any chance looked in another mirror?
No, I have
right.
No
it just doesn't have
bedroom.
To be a mirror. It could just be any reflection in general.
That's what I'm saying. Like, I have no reflection of myself. There is none in my room, except for my phone. But it's
Donna. I have chosen you.
Oh dear.
Oh my God. Let me tell you what. If
be
I join the dark side,
victim.
Robert, I'm coming for you first.
Wow, Oreo did it really good.
You earned it.
No, that's right.
Oh god. So
rankings. So you want me to go first, Cam?
We'll do that. Where do you rank how powerful he is as a villain?
Oh, how powerful
he is as a villain? Because again, but like you guys say, he has a thorough storyline. The slow buildup pays off after the fact, but at the same time, like, the character is always kind of been likened in various other gothic and voodoo heavy horror dramas and mysteries, and Robert Kurtzman, yes, that effects based turn director, has also been talking for years and even made a Photoshop poster that had Candyman fighting the Wishmaster.
Interesting.
How powerful a villain do you think he is? Do you think he could take on Pinhead, or would he need a few more tricks up his sleeve? Because he does want to do a service, but at the same time, he inevitably kind of gets blinded. He gets a little selfish and, you know.
I'd put him in the powerfulness of, like, you know, like a Freddy Krueger-esque type character, which in comparison, I guess you would say Freddy versus Jason is about where that ceiling goes, you know.
He could take Jason.
Yeah, that's about where it goes to me. I mean, he's no Pinhead.
Other than Part Three, where he randomly explodes.
Yeah, he's definitely no Pinhead. His Pinhead's like a fucking god almost. You know, even though he's
10 heads above Freddy, basically.
Yeah.
All right. Fair enough. Donna, how about you? How would you rank him?
Ooh, I would say he's up there. I mean, if I had to do like a Mortal Kombat type of thing and choose the last one, I'm choosing him.
Yeah, you can take on Sub-Zero. I have no doubt.
Get over here.
You know.
Be my victim.
Whoopsie.
When you say Oreo, it means something different. Anyway. Good God. Why do you go there? Why do you go here? Do you want me to have a not safe for work rating? God damn it.
You're the one that invited him onto the podcast, and you
that
knew
is
what he
true,
would like.
But sometimes he behaves, and today he's not.
Men don't behave.
Well, that is true.
I'm playing with my cars and my.
Before Tim Allen became a douchebag, at least I could agree with them. Men are pigs. Anyway,
Yeah, that's true.
I
have a story about that.
I would have to say he's up there with my horror villain.
Yes.
Top fives, you know.
Nice.
I mean, would he survive against, you know?
He could take the Wishmaster.
Yeah.
Because the Wishmaster is ultimately
Leatherface.
He could take on all the gremlins. He could.
Yeah.
Definitely. Not Bruce.
Oh, that's a good question. Could he?
Couldn't take Bruce.
What about the leprechaun? Because we were talking about mesh-ups and stuff. They were talking about doing.
They were, yeah. It was a rumor, and then it's like it spread like wildfire. Lionsgate was actually owning the rights and trying to do something with it. I think the leprechaun would kick his ass for a while, but then eventually he'd wise up and say, hey, what a bee sting for you, buddy.
Right.
And anybody's in the water is going to be at a disadvantage to a shark, so that's why I brought that up.
There you go. Zombie sharks.
A demon zombie shark.
Oh, yeah.
Sharknado, man.
Oh, Jesus.
Sharknado, bro. Did you say Sharknado, man?
Also, if he couldn't take Ash, could he take Evil Ash?
Probably. Because
Evil Ash is kind of dumber, even though he's more powerful.
More pumpkin head.
More pumpkin, ooh. Yeah. Oh, be my pumpkin.
Slap them like
that's the porn parody. Anyway.
Be my pumpkin. I love it. Love it. We should write that one, Cam.
Oh, Jesus. I'm afraid I'll write it, but it'll be under the name Alan Smithy III. Yeah, let's go ahead with all four movie rankings. Ladies first. Let's have
all four combined.
Yeah, just like just give a 5-star rating and like why you rank them like from top to bottom. Like this is the best one in the installment. This is the second best. This is the weaker.
okay. I would give it 4.5 stars total. Of course, the first one, there is no way you could possibly outdo the first one. But the
newest one. Just kidding.
There's always someone
who wants to have a hot take. Yeah. No, I
the newest one is number two. Then number two is three, and number four is four. Because listen, the blonde they have playing that chick, she was fucking blonde. They could have done so much better with the casting and the acting on that. Completely 100%.
Yeah.
I think they were just trying to push out the series. And they didn't care who they casted.
Yep.
Yeah, Donna DeHerrico.
Like Hellraiser, they basically took an unused script and just said, oh, well, I mean, we can do this and that. I was like, why?
Yeah. And I have a question for you guys. While doing my research, do you know who they almost casted as Candyman?
Keith David?
Yaphet Kotto?
James Earl Jones?
Eddie Murphy.
That would
oh, that's right. No, that's true. And that became kind of like how Beverly Hills Cop had Stallone, and that became Cobra under his version. Yeah, his version.
Could
of,
you imagine that?
Oh, well, he
go on
he,
and play Donkey and Shrek.
He did make it, guys. It was called Vampire in Brooklyn, though. Yeah,
well, oh, but they said he was too short, and they couldn't afford him.
Well, that's and he,
which
not
is
to mention,
absolutely 100% fine, because Todd fucking nailed it. 100%
exactly.
Nailed it.
Yeah, Tony was such a reliable character actor. You come from working on Homicide and Platoon and then doing this, and he was like, man, dynamite. And
wasn't he on The Crow too? Somewhere in The
yeah,
Crow?
Yeah,
yeah.
Okay. He's one of the gang members, yeah, at the very end. Yeah. Takes out, he's like the first one who instigates a machine gun fight. He's like, fuck this, I'm not waiting.
And he's still like that. He's like, but he's like, I'm going to lure them in. I'm going to make them do something evil. I'm going to make them see what it's like to be a color, a person of minority, to get them to see our
absolutely. Yeah. After the Night of the Living Dead remake, which he got through his pal, Forrest Whitaker, he's like, this is going to be a big thing. You got to get on it. And he kind of just, that's just it. He was just a reliable character actor, and they kept getting him on all these independent pictures that went to theaters and were
and voice
for,
acting too.
Yeah,
excellent
voice actor.
Voice actor. Yeah, I recognize it anytime I hear him. I'm like, oh, mm-hmm. I know that guy.
Yeah, it's either him or Keith, and it's like, ooh, baby.
Sam Elliott for me, boys.
Fair enough.
That voice.
I like him, even though he's got some bizarre politics. But yeah, no, he's a pretty cool guy.
Yeah.
Okay, so Oreo, buddy, you were gunned for this, so I'll let you go next.
I love this man.
Well, the first one that's...
I'm gonna go last, so
I'm going last. You guys are stupid.
You'll be fine.
You'll be fine, Mr. Prima Donna Oreo. Anyway,
stop it. It's my birthday.
My
You guys are fine.
First
Oreo
one,
you misbehave.
Easily iconic. You can't top that. I did enjoy the remake. That was a lot of fun. That's next. I guess I would go two and then three in that order. Because I haven't seen two or three in a long time. I remember the third one, I think, was one I watched and I didn't get the point of it or something. Or just I missed like half of it or something. Because it was always on Sci-Fi in the afternoon.
Yes, it was.
It's like Candyman, Farewell to the Flesh. I'm like, oh, cool.
And often after other infamous like horror sequels like Nightmare on Elm Street 2, Alligator 2 is like, why are you playing all the affordable bad sequels?
For real.
Oh, God. All right. So, fair enough. And, Will? Rob?
All right. So, my turn here. So,
I like the fourth one the best.
So 90, 92, so I would give the 1992 one, I'd actually give it a six. The only reason I don't give it a higher rating is just because the idea of the demon using his name, you know, that whole story aspect was done. But what gives it such a good high other ranking for me is the nostalgia that it brings about all the underlying tones. So the first one I would honestly give a six.
Nice.
And And Oreo's he was actually kind of right about the fourth one here. So the other two, the 95 one and the 1999 one, I would only give maybe a 4. I don't think they're very good. But the 2021 one, I actually give it a little bit high. I would actually give it more of a 7 on this one, not only mostly because
this is why I said Robert would be my first one if I became Candyman.
This is why I like these rankings, because there's always something.
Because I really think it's hard in this day and age to do a really good reboot remake.
That's right. It is. And, that's true.
And it's so easy to lose the original story of what it was really about. And if you look at how it went from 92 to 2000 to 2021, you know, the other two, it kind of got lost, the message, a little bit. But yeah, this one really resurfaced it and was like, was this is what Candyman awesome. Was about.
Candyman, honey, buy it at your local Walmart.
So I would do it. That's what I would do. That's what I'd give the last one. I like the last
Christina
one.
Christina Aguilera get any residuals? No. She made the song.
So that's good. What I'd give
them. I have dad jokes. not even a parent. I love these points. I'm a total contrarian tonight. So the OG 1992 movie. Again, yes, much like Apocalypse Now, I shit on it. I didn't understand it. It didn't have anything to do with the themes. It had more to do with just kind of the pacing and the build-up and everything. And then I just really just... I was watching it in between, like, well, doing papers for a college studies class, and I totally resonated with it. It's like, on the second viewing, I was like, this is a movie that not only wants to tell a very hard to talk about subject matter, but it also wants to breathe life into, you know, even before we were talking about social contract, it wants to talk about just hidden evils, just other stuff that you just can't describe effectively or easily.
So would the hidden evils be the police, because they would never come help them?
Those, as well as just like you say, yeah, just I mean, it's so cool how she has like a black friend in the first act, and she kind of is like her only translator to this, so to speak. She's never been in this part of town and everything, and she's actually, you know, then when she's on her own, that's where the real terror kind of just sets in for me. Right. Yeah. And God damn it. Now I lost my face. But yeah. And yes, it just pays off. I get how it can be very dated. It's one of those movies. I think it's actually better with a crowd. So watch it with your aunts and uncles who grew up watching it. Watch it with some other pals. Watch it with other people who were just always terrified. Just like to go out of the house. Like, the candy.
Go to your local graveyard and sit with dead friends and watch it on time.
Absolutely.
Go and then bring your fellow Trump supporters with you to watch it.
Listen here. I have a TV projector. I will hang a curtain and I will go to my local cemetery and watch that at night. I am not scared. However, I will not allow my kids to watch it.
You say that now.
Yeah, it's all good. They got time.
Next podcast.
Right.
That was fucked up.
And do not sign off of this podcast now, Donna, saying, I'll be right back. You never say, I'll be right back.
I'll be right back.
I like how you're acting like you're the courier and controlling of everybody. Come on, man.
It's his pimp suit. That's what it is. It's his pimp suit.
I get it.
Whatever.
So, I'm the only contrarian here today. Part 2, second best movie. This is amazing. This is a criminally also misunderstood sequel. Yeah, because again, Candyman is not the real villain. He is basically cleaning shop. He's like the hitman who doesn't kill for money. He does it to just dispose of all the filth and scumbags he encounters. And to actually, again, hit home on slavery and how it's still present today, but in the form of a, you know, shithead boss and other, you know, just colorful characters and moving to New Orleans. That was dynamite. It's not better than the first one. That is true. But there are some shots and other suspense that is slightly better, in my opinion. I know. I'm getting the cold eye stare. It really hits home for me. I just like just giving a backstory.
We get it. You masturbate to it. Jesus Christ.
I'm a no hands guy. Thank you very much. But anyway, oh, okay. Too much information. Now let's clear the room. Take a walk. Take a walk. Get out of here. So, and
come here, Bill Bixby. I need to hitch a ride with you.
Okay. Anyway, so
this is why there's a shortage of peanut butter.
Oh yes, peanut butter. Super chunk.
Anyway, so I'm gonna go with the 2021 one again. It has some moments, but the pacing is total rock sauce here for me. But I can still talk about it. And that scene where they're in the interactive art show, that is scary. Yeah. That is some serious money. However, I looked at it a little more closer. And it just came off to me, unlike Lovecraft Country, where I actually felt like all the various forces actually were speaking the same overall themes of a perilous journey and bringing in, again, just disturbing real life subject matter. I kind of felt like Mia DaCosta and Jordan Peele kind of just, there's a little too many cooks in the kitchen. Like, I do like the puppetry, but the way it's edited in, really irked me and annoyed me.
That puppetry was the shit. I love that.
It was cool, yeah. But I didn't. There were some dead spots in between, and I did like the Tony Todd cameo, and I did like seeing the cops get their comeuppance. But I need some serious editing. To me, I was getting a Tarantino vibes, where it's like, okay, dude, let's wrap this up a little easier, and then let's go to part three. So this is a guilty pleasure. It's a stupid fucking movie. It should not exist. However, kind of like how everyone's liking the lesser Star Treks now that they're actually fixing them in all the other spinoffs and making them make better sense, I kind of feel like that recent Vestron Blu-ray with Tony Todd's new special features actually kind of put it a little more into perspective. It was a pet project for him. He was even executive producer, and he fucking hated it. At various conventions, he would tell people, don't see that movie, that I'm not happy with it. So I feel like this was his last attempt at doing another, like, Where Would Candyman Exist? And somehow, like Donna mentioned earlier, the producers were just hungry for money and basically tossed half the script out. And it shows. There's several moments where, much like, you know, Hellraiser sequels, it does kind of feel like a Twilight Zone episode, and they just added, you know, the title villain in there.
That's true.
And like Oreo, I would see it up at 6 a.m. on Sci-Fi. And I'm like, what is this?
Seriously, if it ain't on Sci-Fi, it's on USA Network. If it ain't on there, it's on
TNT. You go, USA. And lo and behold, this was fun going through all these because, you know, part three is like the only one we can't talk about. It just doesn't make any sense. But all the other ones pretty much find something interesting about the one, the only Daniel Rabatali. That's Candyman's real life name. Sorry.
Okay. I forgot about that.
Yeah, that was what Robert was trying to say earlier that I found out. Like, I did research on his name, and his family was prominent from France that were actually artists and stuff, which I thought was cool that they researched it that far.
Oh, wow.
Exactly, to do that. Man. Yeah. And,
you know.
And Tony Todd has done so many international productions that he does have so many connections there. So it's like you said, who else could play a man who's willing to actually do some actual research instead of, hey, I'm having fun, you know, hamming up as a villain? It's like, well, that's not why you're here.
Now, how many of you guys have actually read the book?
I have read a synopsis of one of the short stories that inspired it, but that was as close as I got. I have not actually sat down and digested it. I know they took some liberties, but I'd love to hear you guys' take.
I never read it.
I haven't read it either, but it's kind of like, do I want to read it? And then every single one of the movies be ruined for me, because usually the book's a lot better.
I mean, you can't do worse than part three, so.
Well, true.
Or that's a long like way to go. Eddie's here.
And honestly, Candyman,
he explodes,
cool,
and that's it. Why did he explode? I still don't understand.
Because she broke the mirror.
Oh, that's right. Okay.
Yeah, that was
too much candy.
Well, I saw that 2 a.m. and usually I'm
tethered to the world. But my thing is, once she broke the mirror, wouldn't rest of the, well, that's probably why his son, whatever, the, was reincarnated or whatever, because they broke his tether to here.
I have a feeling that Candyman predicted the Matrix. No, just kidding. I actually don't. I don't know. That is a good question, but yeah, if he severed whatever connection he had to any other world, is like, did he just take kind of the form of just like, kind of like Rob was saying earlier, a Krueger type, you know, demon who haunts everyone's dreams, and that's the literally the only power. Oh yeah, there you go. As some other kind of supernatural presence, because is it like Hereditary, where he pretty much just inhabits?
That was a good movie. I can't watch it again.
But if it's going to be Hereditary, why wouldn't the third movie where she, I think it was the third movie, yeah, where she was trying to get recognition for people to understand who he truly was and not just the legend, because that was one of his great great relatives, wasn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Why wouldn't she just take over it?
I concur. It would have made it so much easier. Instead, they kind of just said, hey, let's just have her be a screen queen. And it's like, oh, you're, like you say, that's not how the original movies were.
So. Yeah.
And all the, but if there's one thing it does do right, and unfortunately, there are good things in bad movies.
Oh, no.
It's like, I did like how they still had some dirty shithead cops in there, but unfortunately, they don't really have much to do with the rest of the movie. It just seems like they kind of, like you say, kind of want to do a Spawn kind of thing where everyone's a shithead for the sake of it, as opposed to we want to build the world this way.
Yeah. Spawn's a great film.
Or maybe the fact that hey, we made the good movie in 1992, and here we are doing it again in 2020, and cops are still an issue and nothing's changed.
Nothing's changing. It's always bullshit involving, hey, will the union say? Well, the union's bullshit.
Yeah.
Oh, man.
Fun times. I think Candyman would fit in good with Nightbreed, though.
Oh, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. But yeah, that is true. I would like to see that.
Yeah.
Altogether, what do you guys got coming up here? And we have layered Candyman. Hopefully we've given everyone the most ultimate Candyman chat. What do you guys got coming up on Real Sharks?
Actually, we're currently doing a our other podcast right now. Yeah. Oreo has been a part of that. We're doing What We Lost podcast right now. Kind of a Ripley's Believe It or Not type show.
Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm. I lost my marbles. They're helping me find them.
There's no finding those.
Marbles? What's that? No, it's good.
Toodles.
But that's what's going on so far.
What's going on? See? You what's brought it all right on? Back to Marvin Gaye. Oh, man.
Fuck.
What recent movies have you seen? Like to recommend?
I actually saw Tetris recently. I thought that was pretty good.
Yeah. I like the Pinhead version of that, though. Especially the Rubik's Cube, one. Baby. Yeah. Be my Rubik's. Be
actually, my Cam, did you get that text I told you about that movie, the Unicorn Wars? That movie was absolutely fucking like being on an acid trip and watching a horror film.
How many weeks ago was crazy. That?
That was a while ago. I mean, that was one of the most trippiest films I've seen recently.
Oh my god. We're hungry. Bambi meets Apocalypse Now, rated adults only, and it's not a porno. Okay.
Yeah, no, I called it Care Bears meets Apocalypse Now. That's what it is.
I don't know, man. I just saw Guardians 3. I don't think I can handle animal torture. Ted Lasso, season 3. 1000% recommend. I have never felt more human.
Never seen that.
It's got something for everybody. Like,
that's
it's like everything. Like, locker room talk, mental health bonding, romance, everything. It's amazing. But no, seriously, like, it's so meta nowadays. Like, they have even had some other Easter eggs in there, and they've created so many other international jobs as a result of that show. So it's doing some good stuff. But
gonna say I haven't watched any new movies, but right now I'm watching the new Naked and Afraid, Last One Standing, and
that show's fake.
Yeah, for real.
Listen here, it can be fake all at once to be, which I fake. Know it is, but like they stepped it up a fucking notch on this one. Like they have quite a few.
I'll make that movie walking around with me at night and call it the same thing, Naked and Afraid.
Pretty much.
What about Men in the Woods or whatever it's called?
Naked and Afraid, Trip to the Fridge, 12 a.m.
What the fuck was that?
Jeez.
Wow.
This cut. Man reads me like a poem, I swear to God.
That was how you really felt. how are you guys handling reality? Hopefully it's not chaotic, like, I know.
Yeah, it's good, man. I've been working a lot, you know, casino.
Trying to get the gym done. Nice.
You're actually beating people up at casinos. I knew it, Rob.
I don't do that. I don't beat people up anymore. I tell people to beat people up now.
That works.
That's my
job. You're like my bouncing pals. Perfect. That checks out.
Yeah, I'm the guy that goes, hey Cam, can you kick that guy the fuck out?
Right.
Thank you. I don't have enough high arms.
Please don't hit me, sir.
You're right. I fight like Conan.
Yep.
I love how everyone's in instant agreement. Cam sucks.
Listen, you would fight like him, but you'd also make fun of yourself to the person. You just make them uncomfortable and they just leave.
Right. Or just ignore them and just to where they just like can't even concentrate.
I gotta get a new laptop.
Oh dear.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Mine won't connect to the Wi-Fi at all.
I'll always separate Oreo from his computer.
Did you get some ectoplasm on it there, Oreo?
No, surprise. This thing is, I think, 6 or 7 years old. Been working well. And then
upgrade the time.
Yeah, for real. Because it won't eat it. The fan acts up after a while. And
yeah,
then,
that's what I'm going to have to do. Get a new one. Mine's about that many years old, if not older. And
your guys' motherboards will fry if you don't keep it cool.
I actually have mine propped up so that way air gets underneath it while I'm podcasting or doing homework, research stuff.
Gotcha.
Yep.
All right, Cammy, is that it?
Is that it, Cammy?
God damn it, I told you to not
do it. I do have to in my phone as Cammy.
Nice.
Well, I've got another Cam in my phone. I've got to keep them separated. It's bad enough. Yesterday, I sent the group podcast about the actor being 78 years old and having his seventh child. I accidentally sent that to the town cop because she had asked me a question. And I was like, sorry, that's supposed to go to the freaking podcast, not you. And she goes, it's okay. It's funny.
Nice.
While you're at it, check out our podcast. Yeah.
The more you know, man.
Right.
Follow us on the web on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. The podcast is available on Podbean, Spotify, iHeartRadio, Anchor, Apple, and anywhere else podcasts are available. Feel free to review our show and leave comments on any of those sites. Thanks a million for listening. It's a Jacked Up.